Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. And guess who's back from the Rocky Mountain High, and that is Michael P. McCarthy.
Happy to be back, but Colorado was quite nice.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, you look like you had a great time. Saw a bunch of the pictures. That was fantastic. Good to see that you had a great time there. And the only thing you were doing there that would have gotten you high would have been some Coors Light, possibly.
Golden was a little bit south of there, but no, I mean, in Colorado's looks like Maryland's probably going to look with the way things go, and there's a brewery every 100 feet.
Really? I can only imagine, you know? So anyway, we're on an open show tonight, Michael, so our listeners are our guests, so they can call in and ask any question they want, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question. Any question on anything dealing with money, personal finance, whether it's Social Security or Medicare, whether it's your 401k, IRA, Roth conversions, whether it's dealing with charitable contributions, whether it's dealing with elder care, estate planning, income taxes. Mike and I are both CPAs.
Yep.
Enjoy talking about taxes and tax planning. And if you want to call in and ask a question, direct the conversation tonight, anything dealing with personal finances, our objective here tonight is to demonstrate what a true professional financial advisor should do, is be able to answer any question dealing with your personal finances. And that phone number is 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and direct the conversation.
All lines are open. You know, Drew, this time of year, we're about 15 days out from third quarter estimated tax payments.
Yeah.
It's one of the dates we look forward to.
Yeah.
And I find that this is the time of year that the clients and the advisors are all starting to think, oh, end of year tax planning.
Yep. Well, you know, unfortunately, most people in this industry don't think anything about tax planning because they say that's what your accountant should do, you know. But most accountants don't even do that, tax preparers, I should say. They're not doing tax planning for you. They're getting your tax return done. You give them the information, they do it. And
yep.
What you need to do is you need to make strategic moves before December 31st, and then you need to see if there's any additional moves you can make after December 31st.
So I thought we'd lead with two tips for two different segments of our audience.
Go ahead.
So the first tip is for anyone out there that's still working, that hopefully has most of their non-tax or taxable retirement money in a 401k, this is a great time of year to make sure that you've made your non-deductible IRA contribution. That means that you don't have any money in IRAs and you put money into an IRA, but you don't take a deduction and you convert it to a Roth. And this is especially important if your income is a little higher and you couldn't do it otherwise.
And I would agree with you wholeheartedly, Mike, but you have to make it very clear that this is not a simple strategy. You need to know what you're doing, because
yep.
I've seen too many times where I've had people come to me saying, yeah, we did this. And I'm like, oh, man, he didn't do it right, you know.
Hopefully you gotta those fix new 8,700 IRS agents don't find it.
Yeah, you better.
There are many of them.
You better
are.
Hope so. And so what's tip number two? That's a good one.
So we got two parts of our audience. Some of our audience is already retired. And for those that are 72 and above, this might be the time of year that their financial institution, if they haven't already, is reaching out saying, hey, you ready to take your RMD? And that's the time of the year to make sure that if you're planning on being charitable anyway, that you consider doing the QCD before you complete your RMD.
That's true. Well, explain that.
So the
you know, you can throw a lot of acronyms around at our
Well, I was teeing
Mikey.
You up. I don't know
no,
if this,
I'm
the co-host.
I'm
you're the host.
You up
host.
Now.
I'm just trying to, like, you know, serve them up nice and hot for you. But I can
I'm
do it.
I'm teeing you up.
So the qualified QCD, qualified charitable distribution, is an option the IRS gives you where instead of taking your required minimum distribution or any money out of your IRA directly to yourself and having it be taxable to you, you can instead direct that directly to a qualified 501c3 charity and not ever recognize that income, which has a number of benefits more so than just the regular tax deduction. Tax deduction, you calculate your tax, and then you say, okay, take this much off. In the QCD, you're actually lowering your adjusted gross income, so the way that you calculate your tax calculates at a lower rate.
Yep, that's exactly correct. And I had a client just a little bit ago when I just hung up to come onto this mic, and they were about ready to use other assets to give to charity. And I said, what are you talking about? You're going to use your IRA. I keep telling you this. And you've been doing it for a few years, but they seem to forget. It's like you got to constant remind people to use your IRAs to give to charity, you know? So we're on an open show tonight. We have nobody on the line, right?
No, all lines are open. If you're listening, you're thinking about calling, you're the next guest.
410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. Plenty of things to talk about. Social Security is always a good one if you have a Social Security question or Medicare, or maybe you have a Roth conversion question, or maybe you have a tax question, or whatever the case may be. And like Mike says, this is estimated tax time coming up. I've got numerous appointments with people to figure out whether they should make their estimated taxes or if they should make a larger estimated tax payment for September.
Yeah, withholding's always fun too. Well, listen, let's give our listeners a moment to call in and get on the lines, and we'll be right back with more Money, Riches, and Wealth.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here on an open show with Michael P. McCarthy, back from the Rocky Mountains, and we're on an open show, so if you want to call in, 410-922-6680, there's still lines open, 410-922-6680, and get your question answered, but we do have callers online. Who do you want to go to there, Michael?
Let's go to Bob in Lutherville. Bob, how can we help?
Yes, my question is about required minimum distributions. My wife, I'm 72, she's 70, we both are still working full-time in our jobs, and with the minimum required distributions, if we're still working, I don't, maybe she doesn't, but at 72, I will be 72 in September next month, do I have to start taking minimum required distributions out of my 401 or IRAs?
You have to take them out of your 401ks. I'm sorry, you do not have to take them out of your 401ks, all right?
So I don't want to take any of them because we're still working full-time at this point.
You do not have to take them out of your 401ks, but any IRA money, you do have to take them out of, okay? If you're 72 this year, all right?
Be 72 in September, in a few days.
Well, it doesn't matter. If you were turning 72 on January 1, 2022, in the year 2022, and you had a balance in your IRA account on December 31st, 2021, then you have a required minimum distribution for 2022 unless you're willing to die before April 1st, 2023.
I'm not planning on it yet, but
not an appealing option.
IRA, huh? Not 401, because I'm still working. Most of my IRA is with about 7-8 programs with Price. Will they tell me what I? Go ahead, excuse me.
Yes, they will tell you how much you need to distribute. But let me tell you a little strategy you can do, my friend. Okay, so you still need to take that RMD for 2022. Okay,
right.
But before December 31st of 2022. I would
right.
take my RMD immediately. I'd take it like next week. I'd take my RMD, and then I would go to my company and I would say, can I roll my IRAs into my company 401k? And if they
right.
say yes, then you begin the process to roll over your IRAs from T. Rowe Price into your company 401k. And you will no longer have to take a required minimum distribution unless you want to.
Right. Now, is that all my, is it just the required minimum distribution of
no,
my,
it's your entire, it has to be your entire IRA account balance.
Okay. Because I have 4 or 5 funds with that. But
yeah.
I could ask them.
But you would liquidate those funds and you would take the cash and roll it into your 401k.
Okay. I'll see if I can
now,
do that with it.
Let me ask you another quick question, though. Do you do yep. any charitable giving?
We do some, and I've been listening, for you for.
But how much do you give away charitably every year?
Maybe 5, 6.
100 or 1,000?
1,000.
Okay. So then you'd want to keep about $100,000 of IRAs. All right, and then that would require you to take out about $4,000 a year, and you would do all your charitable giving from your IRA. That way, none of your – you can't do a QCD from anything other than an IRA.
Okay.
So how much money do you have in general at T. Rowe Price? Is it $50,000,
$500,000? Well, it's split between IRAs and beneficial IRAs. I probably in the IRA portion maybe $250,000.
Right, so I would move about $150,000 from my T. Rowe Price IRAs into my company 401k. That would leave me with an RMD of about $3,500 to $4,000 or so, and then I would give that to charity every year. You could even keep up to $150,000 in your IRA. And then that way, all of your charitable giving would, for the most part, be done out of your IRA. And it would be a great strategy.
Okay, I'll probably not take, I'm not taking more of your time. I'll probably just make an appointment and meet with you. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, it's a, you have a great opportunity if you're still working at 72. You know, too many people are paying taxes. Nobody knows that they have this great option if you're still working. All right, my friend?
Thank you.
All right.
Take
Sounds
care.
Good. So we got plenty of show left if you're out there with a call and you want to call in, but let's go ahead right to Lee. How can we help you?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, Lee.
Yeah, can you tell me, how do you know if you're an advisor or a fiduciary? Well, I mean, is there more than one set of initials that indicates that, or what indicates that?
The only thing that's a clear indication is that they're a member of NAFA, National Association a personal financial advisor. So that's the clearest indication that the person is a fiduciary 24/7 and can't change their status as a fiduciary when they're working with you. The other way to do that is if they're completely independent. If they're independent from brokerage firms and insurance companies, they hold no licenses with stock brokerage firms or insurance companies, that's another good indication that they're a fiduciary. Those are the only two that I know of, unless you have one, Mike.
No, that I can think
those
of.
Those are the only two you have.
And what can you repeat the first one?
Is there a member of NAFA, National Association of Personal Financial Advisors? It's the only organization of financial advisors that require their members to be a fiduciary at all times and not allowed to take commissions or referral fees, and must always be a fiduciary to their clients. The other is that they have no licenses in insurance or securities, and therefore they are completely independent of all brokerage firms and insurance companies, and then and only those. Those two examples are the only ones I know where you can be sure that that person must be a fiduciary to you at all times. Now, some people will argue that if you're a CFP, you have to be a fiduciary to your clients. And I agree that the CFPs say you do have to be a fiduciary. But the CFP organization, which I respect greatly, okay, defines the word fiduciary. And the way they defined it is within the context of how they conduct their business. And that's a little bit of a wiggle room, I guess I like to call it.
And Lee, let me tell you what you might hear from somebody who says, no, you don't have to be in NAPFA to be a fiduciary. It's true. You don't have to be in NAPFA to be a fiduciary, but that's the one way you can know they're being a fiduciary all the time. The problem is that a number of advisors are duly registered. They're registered both as a broker-dealer or an insurance agency, as well as a registered investment advisor. And what they'll say is, well, whenever we're a registered investment advisor, we're a fiduciary. And whenever we're a broker-dealer or an insurance agency, we're not.
But they don't say that, Mike. They just
don't tell you that at all. They just say, well, fiduciary is fiduciary. Yeah.
Yeah, we're a fiduciary.
Thanks a lot.
All right. No problem.
All right, buddy. Take care. It's a confusing industry, unfortunately, and they do it on purpose. They want the public to remain in the dark as to what's the truth about how to get professional advice. Anyway, we got anybody else online right now?
Well, we've
Mikey?
Got one caller on the line, but I think we'll be best served if we take him after the break. But we've got one caller on the line and no other callers in the stack. So if you're thinking about calling, call in now. It'd be a great time to get on the show. And 410-922-6680 and take it away, traffic. I'm a minute left. Never mind. I cut that time wrong.
Yeah,
all right. Sorry.
Thinking.
Robert
We're
in Parkville. I don't know how to read a clock. Robert, how can we help you?
Hello.
Hey, Robert.
Yeah, Robert. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I just have a question about the tax deductions for solar panels. Are you familiar with it?
It seems like
it's a big thing going on with these solar panels. There's a lot of salesmen out there trying to, you know, sell these panels where they're going to have some type of a thing with your electric company, and your bill is going to be a certain amount, but it's going to be financed for like 25 years or 30 years, but they're going to put the solar panels on for no upfront cost.
Right. I'm very familiar with this. Just did it with my aunt recently.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of it, but I'm also not going to tell people no. Got to hold on with me. I'm going to talk about this in a second, okay? Robert, you got to
hold the
on.
Line. We'll be right
We're
back.
We're
going to
be back
break.
In about 5 minutes.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here on an open show. We got to go back to Robert, and we were talking about these solar panel deals that the utilities are talking about with people, or not utilities, but people selling these things. And so let's go back to Robert real quick.
We are.
Okay?
Robert, are you still there?
Yeah, it's right here.
Hey, Robert. So I did this with my aunt. My aunt calls me about 2 weeks ago, actually, and says, you know, I got this guy telling me that, you know, for $125 a month, I can set this and they'll put the panels on. And if I don't take the tax credits, then I only pay $125. But if I take the tax credits, then I've got to pay $195 or something like that. And, you know, and the list goes on. You know, again, I'm not a big fan of this type of a deal because it normally benefits the utility company and the people selling them. But it's not a terrible deal for the homeowner if they want to keep their utility bill stable. And like my aunt who lives in California, she's worried about rolling blackouts. And a solar panel on a house in California where they don't get a lot of, you know, sunshine, and they're doing rolling blackouts because they can't keep up the electricity to, you know, to provide for the air conditioning. You know, I can understand her point, and I wasn't going to disagree with her. But the contracts are very complex, and the deals are very complex, and all the wording in there is written in the favor of the companies that have selling it to you. And that's why they have salesmen going around selling this stuff to people. Is, you know, I have a theory. Let me just say something. I have a theory that if you have to hire salespeople to sell something to you, there's a problem with the product. Okay. Because in today's world of the internet, if you've got a great product like Tesla, they don't need dealerships to sell cars. They just put it on the internet and people just buy them, you know? In today's world, whenever you have only salesmen selling these things, you always have to be skeptical. But I don't think it's a terrible deal. Go ahead.
Let me add a slightly different angle to it. So I think
you always do, and I'll tell
I think
you
just like
right.
We talk about the financial industry having kind of two different sides, the solar industry does too. So the thing that I think is really problematic and lines up with your argument, Drew, is the people who are selling financed solar panels are not really selling finance. They're just selling it's a leasing company that is purely making money off of selling you this loan. The companies that you pay cash, you get the tax credit for, and you're, you know, having the solar panels installed directly, and you're financing it all yourself, and you fully understand the numbers, I think that's less less predatory than the companies that are out there, which are really
basically. But those are hard to find, Mike, and very few people understand leasing contracts and so forth.
They are, but we do. We've got clients, plenty of clients that have done well putting, you know, they have big properties and they put solar fields out.
They did that. They had somebody come in and invest the money in the solar field. They're just getting rent from
No. It's the solar field is for their house.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's a different
great place
thing.
To store firewood underneath of it.
Right. So, anyway, does that help answer your question, Robert?
Well, my question is, they're talking about these tax credits that can also be used against your federal income tax.
Well, it depends on how the lease deal is structured. Again, if you take the credits, you're going to get more. You're going to have to pay more money per month. If you don't take the credits, you'll get less money. You'll have to pay less money per month.
Well, my point is they're trying to say that the tax credits go against the installation cost. Or does it go on your federal income tax if you owe $3,500?
Goes on the federal income tax return. So if you do the deal and you take the credits, and let's say the credits work out to be $10,000, you can reduce your tax liability by $10,000. But if you don't take the credits, they can sell those credits to other investors. And the investors can get those credits instead of you, and that's why they'll reduce your lease agreement by a certain amount per month.
Is there a difference between owning them, buying it outright, versus financing?
Of course there is. It's just like buying a car
money.
And financing a car. If I buy that car for cash outright, I only pay whatever I paid for the negotiated price of the car. If I finance it, I'm paying all that interest over a period of time. And if I lease it, now, you know, that's where it gets complicated because you got all kinds of other provisions you got to factor into there.
Right.
All right.
All right. That answered my question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank
you. Great question. I just did it too a couple weeks ago. Let's go.
All right. So let's go directly to Steve in Centerville. Steve, how can we help?
Yeah, question. Hopefully you can help me out. I'm new to investing and I have a stock market app. It's M1 Finance and I have a Roth IRA with them. Anyway, I just now received some dividends, and I want to reinvest, do like the back into the dividends that I purchased, the stocks that I purchased. Do the dividends go against my $6,000 yearly match?
No. Okay. So that you buy an investment, let's say it's a mutual fund, and it pays a $100 dividend out into your Roth account, and it's sitting in cash. Your question is that to negate $100 of your potential contribution? And the answer is no. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. That's what I wanted.
Oh, that was an easy one there.
All right.
You could put your $6,000 into a stock that grows to $50,000 and it doesn't negate your yearly contribution. And it's all tax free.
Okay.
So pick that stock out there, my friend.
Excuse me?
Pick the stock that's going to do that for you.
Right.
Into your Roth IRA.
I have a question. I was employed at another business. Anyway, I've moved and I've left since then. Should I go ahead and enroll that, what I had into my retirement there, into my Roth? Or just
so let me ask you a question. What did you have at your old employer, a traditional 401k or a Roth 401k?
For just a regular 401.
Pre-tax, right?
Yes.
You always roll your pre-tax. It's the general rule. You always roll your pre-tax into your new employer. You always roll Roth 401ks out to a Roth IRA when you leave the employer. Okay?
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Steve. All right. Let's keep on going. We got Joan in Baltimore. Joan, how can we help?
Joan?
No, we may have lost Joan.
She's with Thomas.
She's with Thomas. All right. Well, Joan, if you're still out there, call in. We've got some more show left, but we'll go directly to Chuck in Towson. Chuck, how can we help?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing good.
And you?
You might recognize my voice in a few seconds.
No way.
Okay.
It's Jack Nicholas.
Well, yeah. I actually have a serious question. I tuned in just in time to hear the tail end of the guy who called about the required minimum distributions. You recall that call?
Yep. Yeah.
I didn't hear the first part, so I don't know if you addressed this. But so my understanding, just to lay the groundwork, is you bought this traditional IRA pre-tax. You did not pay tax. And at some point in your life, it's age 70, I think?
72 now.
72. The government wants their tax money finally, and they require you to take some of that out each year, and
correct,
they divide the number of years left in your life as they determine by subtracting 72 from the life expectancy of a male or female, correct?
Right, that's called your denominator, and your numerator is December 31st value of the IRA before the year before. So
they just came up for me for some reason. I was looking through my investments, and I thought I saw something that didn't make sense. So I called my advisor. Not my advisor. Don't get upset. I called my brokerage where our money is invested and asked them about what life expectancy number they used. What do you think he told me?
So let me think. If you're 72, they're going to say something like 28 or 29 years.
Yeah, they take you up to 99 years of age.
Well, you see, the reason is that for that is that they're actually taking you and a theoretical joint life expectancy of somebody 10 years younger than you. So if you said, okay, when will the second person die between somebody 72 and 62? The answer is about 29 years or 99, 27 years. So that's where that's coming from. And it's kind of confusing. There's reasons as to why they use that, but it's not worth trying to go into explain to everyone. But that's where it's coming from. It's a joint life expectancy, not your own life expectancy, and the joint person is theoretically 10 years younger than you.
So that's better for me then, right? Because they're going to get less per year to get their tax money back on.
Correct. They're going to get less per year.
Life expectancy were 80, for example.
Yes. If they used your single life expectancy, they'd want you to take a lot more money out a lot quicker.
And how will they get their tax money then?
That's a long story.
Lived to 99.
But I've got to go to a traffic break now. Mikey's screaming at me. All right. Good question. Excellent question.
All right.
Thank you.
I'll see you on a golf course, my friend.
All right. See you, Jack.
All right. Lines are open for the second part of the show. If you got a call in, and we'll be right back with more Money, Riches, and Wealth.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do.
Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We've had a lot of great callers. Chuck there asking a great question about how's the RMD work? You know, it says it's your life expectancy, but you're going to be 99 according to their numbers. Well, you know, it's a you and somebody theoretically 10 years younger than you. That's how that is calculated. It's a long story as to why it got to be that. But anyway, let's go right to our callers, Mike.
Yep. Thomas and Haverty Grace, how can we help?
Yeah, I got a question about the QCDs. I'm 59 and a half.
Okay.
Can that be drawn from the 401k, company 401k?
You can't do a QCD until you're 70 and a half, first off.
Okay.
And number two, you can't do it from a 401k. You could only do it from an IRA, a traditional IRA. Traditional. Now, technically, you can do it from a Roth IRA, but I would never let somebody do that.
Okay. All right.
All right.
One other thing, can I would make a contribution or tithing to a church from a 401, being as I'm 59 and a half?
I mean, you could take the money out of the 401k if they'll let you do an in-service distribution and give it to your church,
mm-hmm.
But you'll have to itemize your deductions, right?
Okay.
So when you itemize your deductions, are you going to get the benefit of that charitable contribution? And the answer is, unless you have a big, big mortgage, the answer is probably not. Do you have a big mortgage?
No, sir.
Yeah, so you got to be very careful. This current tax law, you know, everybody jumped up and down and said, you know, all the good things that this tax law did, but there's a lot of bad things that it did too. For example, us, you know, those in Maryland who had pay a lot of income taxes, you only get a $10,000 deduction for your income taxes. You used to get 100% deduction. Just think of what that did to you. And charitable contributions, unless you had a big mortgage, you're not getting the deduction. Whereas under the old law, your state and local income taxes took you to the itemized deduction. All your charitable contributions were deductible. So you can tell me all you want about that tax law, but it really didn't help us as much as they claim it did.
Okay.
You know? All right, buddy?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Thomas. All right, let's bump right along to Joe in Baltimore. Joe, how can we help?
Oh, yes. The question is a technical question on RMD, required minimum distribution. For first-time people who withdraw, is the rule flexible a little bit and there is no requirement to withdraw it by December 31st of the year they turn 72? You can do it all the way up to April of the following year, but only for first-timers?
That is correct. The required beginning date for the first-timers is April 1 of the year after you turn 72. So you're absolutely right.
Okay, so the IRS will have no gripe if you did not withdraw your distribution by December 31st of the year you turn 72. The deadline is for first-timers April 1st.
That's correct, okay, but then you're going to have to take two in the next year.
The following year, yes.
So as long as you're happy with that, and if you do charitable contributions, it might not be a bad idea to wait until the next year.
Okay, well, thank you very much. That was all I needed to know.
All right.
Thank you, Joe.
Before you go to the next caller, Mike, let's tell Thomas in Habit of Grace that there is a strategy. If he has other investments in like joint accounts or individual accounts that he buys stocks and so forth and they've highly appreciated, that's a strategy that he could implement to help do charitable contributions. That's what he was after. He was looking for some way to get some extra benefit out of his charitable contributions. So highly appreciated assets is something that he can do. And maybe next week he could call in and ask that question.
All right. Sounds good. And we'll go into it more next week on that. So let's go right to John in Ellicott City. John, how can we help?
Yes, hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, I have about $200,000 in the traditional IRA right now in the mutual fund.
Okay.
And if I want to convert that over because the stock market is down to a Roth IRA, we have to pay 20% right up front, or how does that work?
Well, you can convert the whole thing and not give any money to the federal government. It's just when you file your tax return next year, you're going to have to pay up. And if you don't hit your safe harbor estimated tax payments, you're going to owe some interest penalties. So,
right.
And also keep in mind that if you do a large conversion, how old are you approximately right now?
I'm 60.
60. So you're not at Medicare age, so you don't have to worry about Medicare. So the other thing you have to worry about is you want to be careful not to push that tax bracket up too high, because the key to success of a Roth conversion is that the tax rate in the year you convert is the same or lower than the rate that you expect to be at in the future. That's the key. So if you convert it all and you go from a 22% bracket and push yourself all the way up to a 35% bracket, you could end up hurting yourself. And here's a key to Marylanders. Let's say that you're going to move out of Maryland when you retire, and you're going to go to a no tax and you're going to go to a no tax state like Florida.
Yeah, I am, because that's where my parents live, and that's where I'm planning to move.
Well, then you're going to have an 8.5% lower tax bracket in the future. So why would you want to, maybe some conversion, but I wouldn't go hog wild with it. So be careful. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Good question. Great question.
Thanks, John.
All right, Mikey, what else do we have? Now, and just to let you know, 6:57 is 2 minutes earlier than what we need to go off the air.
All right. Well, we don't have any callers, and we've got 3 minutes left. So if you've got
you didn't pick up on that little jibe at you.
Yeah, I got it.
You got it. But you weren't laughing, so you didn't think it was funny, did you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's okay. I'll get you next time, Drew. Don't worry.
Yep. But no, we've got no callers left for the show. Trying to think of what topics we were talking about earlier.
Well, there's tons of topics to talk about, One that I'm going to go over with Sean in the next day or two is why everyone needs to think about, do I have a doctor of personal finance? Because, Mike, I'm actually about, a month or two away from beginning to publish a book about my passion as to why everyone that calls themselves a financial advisor should be a doctor of personal finance. So it'll be coming up in about 2 months, but I'm going to start talking about it more and more.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Excellent. You're tired.
It's been a long day, and I had a lot of appointments today.
I had a lot of appointments today, too. And you're just kind of winding back into the work
environment. I'm sitting here, and I'm trying to think of, we talked earlier, and we gave a tip to the people who are working about non-deductible IRAs, and we gave a tip to the people that were 72 and above about QCDs. And I had one for the in the middles.
Yeah, something in the middles. Well, remember it next week.
I'll remember it next week.
You going to be back with me next week?
I will be back with you many weeks.
All right.
I used up my two times off.
Thank you, my friend. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Things are gonna